Good morning to everybody. Very glad that we have this time to study together. I want to invite you to take your Bibles over to Proverbs chapter 3 this morning. Proverbs chapter 3 is where we'll begin as we start thinking about trust, especially our trust in God, our trust in our relationships, like our spouse and our family, as well as the trust that we have for each other as fellow Christians and the trust that is needed to be exercised within the local congregation. When we start thinking about trust this morning, I want you to think about this little bottle of Sprite. All right? Now, you've all been to somebody's house, or maybe you've been in your car before, and you've had some kind of carbonated beverage, and you know what happens sometimes. It gets good and shaken up. And then we think, okay, don't fail me now, little cap. Right? We think, okay, now that this is really shaken up, what am I going to do? How am I going to handle this, you know? And most of us, we want one big thing. Some stability. We want to just set that Coke down, and we want to give it some time. We want all that carbonation that's in there to settle back down. Because we know if we do something rash, like if we do something big and quick, and we just undo that top, it's going everywhere. Things are going to blow up. And the reality is that in our life, things get shaken up, don't they? People get sick. Things happen that we didn't expect. We get blindsided by circumstances, whether it's in our family or our job. And just everything gets shaken up. And in those times, we are so eager for some stability. We want to be able to set it down. Maybe if you've had a Coke that's gotten all shaken up before, you've opened it just a little. You want to take a little bit of the pressure off, a little bit at a time. Why are we in Proverbs chapter 3? We're in Proverbs chapter 3 so that we can all read together and notice verse 5. Trust. New American Standard says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. I want you to think this morning about growing in trust. And the first thing when you think about trust is I want you to know trust provides stability. Verse 5, rather than leaning on our own understanding, rather than looking to ourselves to figure out how to handle life when it gets all shaken up, we turn to God and we trust in God. And He gives us the stability that we most need. Now let's just make this a super application right here at East End. I'm looking around and I see people that have been members of this church for a few weeks and a few decades. That's pretty cool, right? To see that whole span. We got Edna that's been a member a few weeks. We got Sister Goodpastor that's been here a few decades. And here we are. We're a congregation that has so much going for us. And I don't think we've stopped and publicly thought about or publicly expressed how stable the leadership transition in this congregation has been over the last couple of years. When I was hired here as the preacher, Tom and Frank were the elders that did the interviewing. And for various reasons, both very honorable reasons and caring for their families, Tom and Frank have stepped down, and Joe and Wendell are our elders. Have you even thought about how smooth that has gone compared to how it could have gone? Do you think about the congregations that when they lose their elders, they are tossed into chaos? They are tossed and everything about that church gets really shaken up. And there are these men's business meetings that drag on forever where no decisions get made month after month after month. There are people that get really angry about this or that and there's just all this drama. So many churches have experienced that. But what have we had at East End? Yes, it's been a significant change because we love those guys and we hated to see them step down. But guys, there are congregations that would just give their left arm to have as smooth of a transition as we have had. And it speaks very well to Frank and to Tom in wanting to bring on other men that are trustworthy to give stability to this congregation in that kind of transition. And we need to appreciate that. We need to remember how good we've got it, that we've had continuity in our leadership and in our eldership, even over the last couple of years. And other things, you know, shake up a congregation. When we have families that we love so much and they move to another city or another state, we miss them. But we have new families that join us, and we're glad to build relationships with them. When we are trusting in God, when we are continuing to do things God's way, even in a local church, oh, it provides such stability. Is there adjustments to be made? Of course there are. There always are. But it provides incredible stability, and we need to appreciate that. Another big reason we're studying trust this morning, and we're also going to study trust next Sunday morning, is because trust unlocks our teamwork. It is so wonderful to see how that when we trust each other, I don't have to come micromanage what you're doing. You know, all of our Bible class teachers this morning, I absolutely trust that the Bible was taught in those classrooms downstairs for all of our children. Not because I was peeking in the window of the classroom door, but because I know the teachers. Because I know their love for God. Because I know their love for the hearts of those students. Because they are trustworthy teachers. And so I know what they're doing in the classroom. When we trust each other, it allows us to tap into our talents and our abilities, our creativity, and even our hard work to get more stuff done as we function through a team. And then maybe my favorite thing I learned all week in studying about trust is that trust accelerates our organization. When we can work as a team, and I don't have to micromanage you, and you don't have to micromanage me, then we just move forward. And all of the kind of like red tape that slows organizations down, that's just taken away by trust. And you do this all the time in your family. I imagine, husbands, that you don't ask your wife to present a detailed accounting of the grocery receipt every time she comes home with groceries. And wives, you probably don't ask your husband to present a detailed accounting of the grocery receipt every time he comes home with groceries. You just trust them not to waste a ton of money at the grocery store. Just go get what we need and bring it home. Now, Tracy knows more sugar comes home if I'm doing the shopping than if she's doing the shopping. But other than the sugar content, she can trust me. And that just accelerates the way things go in our family. I don't have to micromanage her. She doesn't have to micromanage me. But I want you to understand that it impacts more than even just our groceries. Let me tell you about the $23 billion acquisition of McLane Distribution. Stephen Covey writes about this. He says, consider this example. Warren Buffett, CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, generally considered one of the most trusted leaders in the world, completed a major acquisition of McLane Distribution, a $23 billion company. He purchased it from Walmart. As public companies, both Berkshire Hathaway and Walmart are subject to all kinds of market and regulatory scrutiny. Typically, a merger of this size would take several months to complete and cost several million dollars to pay for the accountants, auditors, and attorneys to verify and validate all kinds of information. But in this instance, because both parties operated with high trust, the deal was made with a single 2-hour meeting and a handshake. In less than a month, it was completed. High trust, high speed, low cost. High trust, high speed, low cost. Do you know that we are beneficiaries of that at East End? That because we trust each other, we can do things faster. Because we have had that continuity in our eldership, we are able to continue to press forward in our goals towards evangelism in this community and all the other goals that the elders have laid out for us this year. And again, if we can just make this extremely personal, let's think about the elders' announcement about wanting John to come and work with us this summer. Do you know what happened? And I think we can all agree with this in hindsight. We were given a little bit of information and asked to make a big step, right? We were given a little information. We were told his name, a couple of sentences about the guy, and then we asked you for something big. Pay more. Like, look at your checkbook and give just a little bit more. And we asked that when? A couple of weeks after we all realized that money was being taken out of our weekly checks through the tax law changes and our withholdings. So we asked for more money when we all were starting to get a little bit less, and we asked for it with a small amount of information. And people gave. And people gave generously. And that's unheard of. You were given something little. You were asked for something a lot. And that does not go well without trust? Were questions raised? Of course they were. Good questions were raised. That's good. But you know what? It's only possible for us to do something like that, to capitalize on that opportunity and to move very quickly in that decision because of trust. And trust plays out in those kind of situations within a local congregation. It plays out in these kind of situations with your spouse and with your friends. And so it's just so important that we understand trust and that we grow in our trust. So let's go a little deeper. How about how we build trust? Well, why is it that I would say people would write that check? Why is it that we would have confidence in our Bible class? Well, number one, it's because we have built trust with each other, and we've built that through both competence and character. When we think about competence, this is the skill to do what we have committed to do. I have committed to this congregation to bring you a sermon from God's Word each week. And hopefully, I'm going to have the skill to do that. And in fact, you're trusting me to have the skill to do that. But secondly, there's an aspect of character. You're trusting me to actually do that on time, week in and week out. And if you drive by the building and you see my car up in the parking lot, then you say, okay, Philip's at the office. Philip must be studying. But if you never drive by the building and you never see my car in the parking lot, you're trusting me because of my character. You're saying, I think Philip is the kind of guy who's not going to just deposit the checks week after week and never come to study and never do the things that the elders have asked him to do or the things that as a church we expect him to do. You're looking at someone's skill level and you're looking at someone's character. And when you see both of those to a high degree, then it's very easy to trust someone. And if either are lacking, then our trust begins to be eroded. What's awesome about these two things is that God actually exhibits both qualities. Because God shows us throughout the Bible, even starting here in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5, about trusting in the Lord with all of our heart, that He is the one that is competent. He has the wisdom and the strength to help us stand firm, far more firm than if we were leaning on our own understanding. But more than just what He exhibits about Himself, He exhibits this in the qualities of the local shepherds. Come with me, if you will, to 1 Timothy chapter 2. You know, when I think to myself, why do I trust the local elders? Well, I trust them because I know their character. I spend time with them. I trust them because I know their competence. I see their decision making. But even for those that may be a brand new member here at East End and you haven't gotten to know them very well, you can put your trust in these guys because of what's said for us in 1 Timothy chapter 3. Beginning in verse 2 down through verse 7, we have these qualifications given, these qualities that local shepherds possess and that they exercise. And all of these demonstrate either competence, character, or both. Look at verse 2. An overseer then must be above reproach. How's that for character? An overseer then must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate and prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine or pugnacious, but gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money. He must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. If a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? And not a new convert, so that he will not become conceited and fall into the condemnation incurred by the devil. And he must have a good reputation with those outside the church so that he will not fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Do we just appreciate how when God says, I'm going to put these men in this position that requires a lot of trust, He chooses men that are worthy of trust. He chooses men that have shown competence. They've been able to lead their family. Therefore, we believe they can lead the family of God. He's chosen men that show great character. They're peaceable. They're free from the love of money. They're not conceited. So that we would have great trust in them. We are just so blessed to have elders that we can trust, deacons that we can trust, teachers that we can trust. And it begins with competence and character. So what about us? What kind of character, what kind of competencies do we need to be developing so that our trust would grow? Let's come back to Proverbs and let's go to chapter 20, please. We're going to spend a lot of time here this morning. Proverbs chapter 20, I want to walk you through several verses in this chapter, because this is the chapter that verse 6 asks the question, who can find a trustworthy man? You may have noticed this from our scripture reading this morning. Who can actually find someone who is trustworthy? Well, 1 Timothy 3 tells us about finding a trustworthy elder. But for each of us, there are traits from this chapter that are super beneficial in recognizing trust. Let's just start with verse 3. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 3. Keeping away from strife is an honor for a man, but any fool will quarrel. This is something that overlaps with that not pugnacious, that not a fighter that is applied in 1 Timothy 3 of an elder. And it just comes back to, is this person peaceful or are they quick to engage in a foolish argument? If we want to be a high trust kind of person, then we need to show others that we can live with peace, that we're not going to lose our steam, not we're going to blow our top, you know, especially blow it right here when things get shaken up, but that we would be stable, that we would be someone that can be counted on in a high pressure kind of situation. Again, verse 3, any fool will quarrel. Anybody can pick a fight. Anybody can argue. Anybody can make a situation that is bad get worse. But we trust those people who can bring peace. Look at the next verse, verse 4. The sluggard does not plow after the autumn, so he begs during the harvest, and he has nothing. Lazy people are not people that we typically trust, are they? Because we don't trust them to actually do what they say they're going to do when they have said they're going to do it. We know they'll never finish in time. We know that they are not exercising the kind of diligence or the kind of hard work that's going to be needed for them to actually be reliable. But if we can live with a good work ethic, if we can be hard workers, then we're going to boost the trust that other people have in us. Look at verse 6 and 7. Many a man proclaims his own loyalty, but who can find a trustworthy man? This is basically saying it's very easy for people to say, oh, trust me. You know, for that used car dealer, trust me. For that person negotiating, just trust me. It'll be okay. But he goes on to say in verse 7, a righteous man who walks in his integrity, how blessed are his sons after him. We need people that are dependable instead of people that are all talk. Oh, just trust me, it'll be okay. Oh, just trust me, it'll all go all right. We want to know, is this person truly dependable? Has this person been a blessing to his family? Does he actually walk with integrity? That's the kind of person we'll trust. Look at verse 10, just versus unfair. Differing weights and differing measures, both of them are abominable to the Lord. This is speaking about the marketplace, that if you come to buy, you know, a pound of sugar or a pound of flour, then I'm going to have one weight to set on the scale, and it may be labeled a pound, but it's not really a pound, because I'm going to cheat you, and the scales are not actually going to be balanced, and you're not going to get your full pound of flour. You're not going to get your full pound of whatever you're purchasing. He says, this is abominable to the Lord. When we're unjust, when we're unfair in those kind of business dealings, we're looking for people that are trustworthy, that treat everyone equally and justly. Same thing with that verse 14 and verse 17. Verse 14, bad, bad, says the buyer, but when he goes away, then he boasts. Oh, I don't want to buy that thing. Look at that. That's so junky and it's all run down. I don't want to buy that thing. And then we come and we see a buddy and we say, look what I just got. It's in mint condition. It's like new. We couldn't help but say how bad it was and point out every flaw as we tried to negotiate that price lower and lower. But when we show it to someone else, we say, oh, look how great it is. We need to be more upfront. We don't need to be someone that over-exaggerates. Verse 17, bread obtained by falsehood is sweet to a man, but afterward his mouth will be filled with gravel. It doesn't matter how good of a deal you get. If you get that deal, if you make that profit through falsehood, it's bitter in the end. You may want to brag about it at first, but it really does not satisfy. We trust people who are upfront with us and who look at things on a level playing field. Look at verse 15. There is gold and an abundance of jewels, but the lips of knowledge are a more precious thing. You know what we need? We need richness in wisdom, richness in knowledge. Like verse 15 says, not just to be rich in gold. You give me rich in gold, and that may actually make me trust you less. Because I wonder, how did you get all that? People didn't just leave that at your doorstep. I mean, you did something to convince people to give. How did you get that? But to be rich in wisdom, to be rich in knowledge, that builds trust. And it doesn't even have to be your own wisdom. It doesn't even have to be your own knowledge. Look at verse 18. Sometimes we trust people because we know they're willing to ask someone smarter than themselves for good counsel. Prepare plans by consultation and make war by wise guidance. I trust you more if I know you'll admit when you don't know the answer. And you'll go look it up. That you'll go consult an expert. That you'll go ask someone else. That just makes me trust you more. Verse 19. He who goes about as a slanderer reveals secret. Therefore, do not associate with a gossip. Don't you love that about godly elders? Our elders. They can keep a secret. That they're not going to go and tell everybody all your private business. You can't trust people that always reveal a secret. You can't trust people that gossip constantly, but we can trust those who know how to choose their words with discretion. The last verse here, verse 23, differing weights are an abomination to the Lord, and a false scale is not good. We don't want people that are corrupt. That's not the kind of people that we would trust. We trust people who are impartial. Although verse 6 raises the question, who can find a trustworthy man? The rest of the chapter answers. We can. We can find trustworthy people because we can look at their character and at their competence. We can look at these kind of qualities that are on the screen. And we can trust people who live this way. So that will help us build trust. I want to wind the lesson down in talking about how we use trust. Yes, trust is built when I examine your character and I examine your competence. But for trust to actually be exercised requires love. Love is like the gasoline for the engine of trust, okay? Put it this way on the screen. While trust begins with competence and character, it is exercised with love. And I'll show you what I mean by this in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 7. Because there are people that you love, there are people that you have chosen to trust because of their character, because of their competence, and then something comes up where that trust is really stretched, where you have to really decide, okay, things are not going as well as I thought they were, and it's tempting, maybe if it's even very easy for me to blame you for this situation, to get angry at you about this situation, but because I know you, because I have confidence in your character and in your skills, I'm going to turn on that engine of love and I'm going to trust. Look at chapter 13 and verse 7. Chapter 13 and verse 7. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. What do you mean believes all things? Like, I'm just going to believe whatever you say? You told me that you were going to get this job done, or you told me that you were going to have this much money ready for me at this time on this date, and now it's not here? And I'm supposed to just believe all things? Whatever excuse comes out of your mouth, I'm supposed to just believe it. Whatever explanation that you offer up, I'm supposed to just believe it. Or if I'm trying to call you and you don't answer your phone, and I call your work number and you don't answer that phone, and I call your personal cell and you don't answer that phone, I'm supposed to just trust. I'm supposed to just believe that there's a reasonable explanation for why this hasn't been done right and on time. Yes. Yes, love just believes. You know, if you've set up a date, I know many of us had a date with our spouse this weekend or for Valentine's, and you set that up and maybe you were both coming from work and you got to the restaurant and you had agreed to get there at 6:30. And your spouse isn't there at 6:45. And your spouse isn't there at 6:55. How do you respond? Do you believe all things? Do you believe good about your spouse? Do you think to yourself, they must have got caught in traffic? Or they must have had something really important at work that had to be finished? Or, and I've been guilty of this, at 6:45, do you think to yourself, if she really cared about me, she would have already been here. If she really cared about me, she could at least send a text message, This is our Valentine's dinner. Am I so unimportant to them? See how that goes? Trust, yes, begins with character and competence, but for trust to really be exercised, it requires love. It requires believing all things. I'm going to believe the very best about my spouse when they're 30 minutes late, 45 minutes late, an hour late. Look at what verse 7 says. Hopes all things. Am I going to sit there stewing on how I have been wronged and I have been disappointed? Or I'm going to hope that she's okay. I hope she doesn't have a flat tire. I hope that everything's all right. I hope that she'll be here soon. Am I going to hope the very best in that situation? Again, verse 7, love endures all things. What if they show up and say, baby, I completely forgot. I was reading in the Love and Respect book that Jerry's been going through upstairs in the classroom, and one of the stories he has in chapter 2 or chapter 3 is about a husband that has forgotten several anniversaries. And it's their 10th anniversary, and he remembers. So he stops on his way home from work. He gets flowers. He gets a card. And he is on his way home, and he's just looking forward to this wonderful evening. And she opens the card, and her face just drops. And he accidentally picked up a birthday card instead of an anniversary card. And she's so angry. And she just lashes into him with all of the disappointments from the last 10 years of their marriage. And you know what? Trust doesn't do that. Trust says, it was an honest mistake. I read 10 different cards looking for the one that perfectly expressed how I felt about you. And when I went to pick up this one, I accidentally picked up this one. And I wasn't in a hurry because you're unimportant. I was in a hurry because I couldn't wait to see your face. Love powers trust. Andy Stanley said it this way, and I just love it. When there is a gap between what I expect and what I experience, I'm going to fill that gap with something. I'm going to fill it with trust, or I'm going to fill it with suspicion. When there's a gap between what you expect and what you experience from me, maybe you're sitting there going, Philip, this is not the best sermon on trust I've ever heard. Okay, so are you going to fill that with suspicion? Philip must have played a lot of golf this week. Or are you going to fill it with trust? Philip did the best he could. You know, when there's a gap between what you expect and what you experience, your spouse calls you and they say something and you think, I don't think they really put that in the most loving terms. They weren't really speaking as clearly or with as much grace as I expected them to speak with. Am I going to fill that gap with trust or suspicion? Let me tell you what love does and what real trust does. We fill the gap with trust. And I just want to commend the congregation for the trust. When the elders gave a little information and asked for a big step, you filled the gap with trust, and we want to celebrate that. We want to be able to repeat that in the future. Because trust provides stability when life shakes us up. And trust activates our teamwork that we share with one another. And trust accelerates the things that we can do as a group of God's people in this community. And it's a tremendous blessing. It's true of our trust in God. It's true of our trust with one another. It's true of our trust in the local church. So why are we going to cover this next week? Because of 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Final thing for you this morning is that thankfully, trustworthy people can love even those who doubt them. Because maybe you responded with great trust when the elders talked about John, or maybe you've responded with great trust with your spouse or other times, but maybe you've responded with great suspicion. And we've all been guilty of that at various times. Next Sunday when we come together, we'll look at 1 Corinthians chapter 4, because Paul was someone who was trustworthy. He was worthy of trust. He had the competence and the character to do what was pleasing to God. And yet someone had come in and stirred up the Corinthians, and their trust in Paul had been eroded. And 1 Corinthians chapter 4 shows us how he exercised great love to rebuild that trust. And all of us have times where we violate someone's trust, and it has to be rebuilt. And I think that's a very important part of this lesson for us to be able to cover. So we'll pick up in 1 Corinthians 4 next Sunday, and I hope you'll plan to come back and to be with us at that time. Lord willing, this lesson is going to help you grow in trust. It's going to help me grow in trust, and all of us as a church grow in our trust of one another. But ultimately, we need to be growing in our trust of Jesus Christ. I love the way he phrases this in John chapter 14. Do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. Yes, life gets really shaken up. But don't let your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you. For I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And you know the way where I'm going. Those of us that are here this morning that are Christians, we trust that Jesus has ascended back to the right-hand side of the Father's throne and that he's coming back to bring us home. We hope that you will place your trust in Jesus Christ as well. That you will prepare yourself for the day that he comes back by repenting of your sins, confessing your faith in Jesus Christ, and being buried with him in baptism, that you might continue to walk in trust with God. If you've not taken those essential steps, then please come forward while we stand and sing and let us help you.